information is free.
The law? Oh,
there is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight we care.
Appear to border
it shows.
The law?
The country.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
When I am dead and am opened, they will find West Virginia written on my heart. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 176 of Media Monarchy. It's July 2nd, 2010, and my name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, RIP Robert Byrd, West Virginia worry, and Independence Weekend, Target Tehran, quagmires and psyops, peaceful protests, provocateurs, and police state updates, banksters, heart, drugs, evacuations, and geoengineering, all that and so much more. July 2nd, 2010, episode 176 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Something new, show me something new, show me something new.
Show Me Something New. More music from the Swedish band known as the Shout Out Louds. You may recall we heard their track Fall Hard a couple of weeks ago, right after I saw them here in Portland, Oregon. That's from their current record, Work. And ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 176 of Media Monarchy. It's July 2nd, 2010. Half over now. Time is accelerating it, no doubt. And as always, we are broadcasting, recording live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. And thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com, simulcast live online worldwide, as well as 92.3 FM and 1670 AM in Casper, Wyoming, the worldwide home of free speech, RevereRadio.net. All those places broadcasting live, as well as currently streaming live video from the PRA studios here on ustream.tv/Media Monarchy. And thanks to all the other folks that replay the show throughout the week, frolympia.org on 98.5 FM in Olympia, Washington, phantomradio.org, 93.9 FM in Boulder, Colorado, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net on 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California, OneSkyRadio.com on 90.7 FM in Kisilov, Alaska, StickAM.com/Ground Zero Radio on 87.9 in Canton, Georgia, and my man Glenn behind CascadiaPublicRadio.org and Jeff of Radio23.org, which is where you can get your high-quality downloads of all the episodes from Media Monarchy, suitable for rebroadcast if you've got a pirate or internet or community or any kind of media outlet. You don't have to ask. Just get the high quality and replay it. And again, we're nonpartisan. All are welcome. A big tent approach. Both sides of the phony left-right paradigm completely corrupt, and we do the data mining here on the site and show, going through the mass amounts of news that, of course, most of the folks out there, as they're crushing under the weight of the new financial world order, they don't have time to go through all the news. But we're trying to fight against that. The come home, sit down, sack out, and shut up. That window is closing. And as we'll see and have already seen, and we covered all the latest from my two sister sites, foodworldorder.com and cyberspacewar.com, whether they say you have a healthy eating disorder, orthorexia nervosa, that you're crazy if you care about what you put into your body, or all the nuts that they'll put up in the mainstream hit pieces as straw men, the biggest fools in sub and counter fringe culture, put up as if they represent that dissent, and of course then thereby smearing everybody as being a bunch of nuts if you're concerned about central banks that print money out of thin air and loan it to us at interest, or the massive food corporations that are poisoning us. And again, if you think it's all just an accident, do you subscribe to the accidental theory of history? If that were the case, you sure think it would benefit us a little more than it does just by accident. But if you do the studying, I think you'll find that throughout the generations and decades and centuries, you'll find the same handfuls of families and organizations and secret societies and roundtables and think tanks and non-governmental organizations and foundations and all their coterie. You'll find them behind both sides of the phony Hegelian dialectic. They use this dialectic on a number of levels to herd you into the direction that they want. It's thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. You can also call it problem, reaction, solution. And that's how they roll. And we're going to use the free and open internet while we have it to use the mass amounts of alternative media and open source intelligence and we'll swipe from the corporate mainstream media and try and give you the context and the subtext, perhaps what they won't give you, why a story is important. They know you have trouble remembering what happened last week, let alone last year or last decade. And we do have so much to get into. We always glance at the breaking news, and again, it's Friday morning, July 2nd, 2010, and this is episode 176. The really important things going on. Netherlands are up by 2 against Brazil, and Mel Gibson reportedly hurled racial slurs yet again. And then there's some other stuff about, you know, payrolls dropping by 125,000 and Petraeus grandstanding in Afghanistan as explosions happen around him. But don't worry about that stuff. You need to worry about Tiger Woods and Mel Gibson and Heidi something or other and Stewart, what's his name, and all your favorite dog and pony shows. And we'll, of course, check back in periodically on Google to see what's happening in the breaking news world. But now let's get to what was, on a number of levels, one of the bigger stories of the past week. And we're going to go into this in pretty good detail. West Virginia's Robert Byrd, the longest-serving congressman in United States history, is dead at the age of 92. We've got a lot of clips and a lot of media that are going to flesh this out for you. But, and again, I welcome new and returning listeners. Longtime listeners know I'm born and raised West Virginia boy, southern West Virginia, lived in the state for 28 years until I moved to Portland in 2005. The death of Robert Byrd is a pretty massive event for the state of West Virginia. So it's one thing to say, oh yeah, he's always been there, you know, my whole life. Robert Byrd's been there my dad's entire life. He has been there forever. And what we'll say here right at the outset is that I've come to bury Robert C. Byrd, not to praise him. There are many things to praise. There are many other things to not praise. But why we're going over this, and again, this is of pretty fundamental importance to my home state of West Virginia. And again, one of these kind of stories, there's mass amounts of information. We have all the links for you up on the page. But let's just get into just a main line obituary from CNN. Robert Byrd, longest serving member of Congress, dead at 92. The self-educated son of a coal miner who became the longest serving member of Congress died early Monday at the age of 92. Byrd, a 9-term Democrat, and remember, senators' terms are 6 years. 6 times 9, 54. Byrd, a 9-term Democrat, was known as the master of the chamber's often arcane rules and as the self-proclaimed champion of the Constitution, a jealous guardian of congressional power. His speeches were laced with references to poetry and to the Greek and Roman classics, often punctuated by the brandishing of his pocket copy of our national charter. He was also known as the King of Pork, using top positions on the Senate Appropriations Committee to steer federal spending to his home state, one of the nation's poorest. Byrd relished the title. Pork to the critics is service to the people who enjoy some of the good things in life, and I've been happy to bring to West Virginia the projects to which they refer. I have no apology for it. When I am dead and am opened, they will find West Virginia written on my heart. Byrd was also an outspoken opponent of the illegal second war in Iraq, calling his 2002 vote against a blind and improvident authorization of military action the proudest moment of his career. West Virginia Governor Joe Manchin, a Democrat, has the power to appoint a replacement for Byrd, whose current term is set to expire in 2013. 2013 would be when they would finally move out. There will still now be an election, November 2012. But continuing, when Byrd entered Congress in January 1953, a postage stamp cost 3 cents, and American kids were clamoring for a new toy called Mr. Potato Head. Harry Truman was president, Winston Churchill was Britain's prime minister, and Joseph Stalin was still the Soviet Union's leader. In November 2009, 2 days before his 92nd birthday, Byrd passed Arizona Democrat Carl Hayden's record to become the longest-serving member of Congress. His health problems mounted in his later years, putting him in the hospital four times between February 08 and September 09. Under pressure from fellow Democrats, he announced he would step down as the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee after the 2008 elections. I've been privileged to be a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee for 50 years and to have chaired the committee for 10 years during a time of enormous change in our great country, both culturally and politically, he wrote in a statement announcing his intention. A new day had dawned in Washington, and that's a good thing. For my part, I believe that it's time for a new day at the top of the Senate Appropriations Committee. Now, this article goes on through Byrd's upbringing. Of course, his involvement and membership in the Ku Klux Klan, like an albatross around his neck his entire life. And I should mention that on the one hand, I'd want to give Byrd leeway because maybe I want to like him and because I want to know that he was good for the state of West Virginia and that people make mistakes and people can change their minds and come out about why they were wrong. But I sure don't afford Joey Ratz the same benefits when we talk about his membership in the Hitler Youth. Of course, just saying, of course, he was in the Hitler Youth because he wanted to be, not because he probably had to be. So we want to put that on the record in fairness. So we do have, like I said, massive amounts of related media and, of course, Wikipedia entries and more Newsweek Interactive. We've got HistoryCommons.org entry, the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post, and on and on and on, Associated Press, all that and so much more. Now, as we noted, Manchin has the power to appoint the new senator. Theoretically, he could appoint himself, although he would have to resign, and I believe recent political history shows us that governors who resign before their term is out while grabbing for greater political golden rings aren't looked to very kindly. Not to compare Palin to Manchin, but most folks know that Manchin wants the senator gig. And we can tell you that what's probably going to happen, he's going to appoint a low-level guy, someone fresh, someone green, if you will, and that guy's going to run out the term, and then we'll probably politely step aside so that Manchin can run. So many things here to get into, and again, not enough time. And I don't want to bore you with all the West Virginia connections, although I'm sure there'll be things that I'll forget later that, oh, I should have told you this or that. But I know one thing, and I don't know if I've mentioned this before in referencing Joe Manchin, which not like we've mentioned him too many times on Media Monarchy. We, of course, referenced him during the recent mining explosion. That environmental catastrophe caused by corporatism and carelessness and greed and worse. Now, of course, eclipsed by an even more catastrophic event by corporatist carelessness and greed and worse. I remember my Italian grandmother never liked Joe Manchin. And I'm half Italian, dad's side of the family, totally Italian. They didn't like him because he changed his name. The original family name was Mancini. And he dropped the I and made it Manchin, and that's M-A-N-C-H-I-N. But I remember my grandmother didn't like that because you're abandoning your heritage for a more palatable name. And I think we could kind of all agree with that. So, having said all that, I put together a massive compilation of clips that I think will give you a good rundown and hopefully impart upon you, you know, how kind of a big deal this is. And yes, it's going to affect votes possibly going on in the Senate currently. But just what this all means. And again, as we've talked about Robert Byrd in the past on Media Monarchy, as some of these milestones came up in the past couple of years, I love that West Virginia gets this in the record books. I love any kind of positive thing that can go for my beleaguered home state of West Virginia. I'd like to have this record go in the books and never be touched, because as interesting and historical as this all is, I no way endorse 92-year-olds running the country or being two or three heartbeats away from the presidency. So, my friends, as I said, I've come to bury Robert Carlyle Byrd, not to praise him. So, having said all that, let's listen to a compilation of clips on the obituary of the late Robert C. Byrd.
The longest-serving senator in U.S. history has died. Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia was in and out of the hospital during his final years of serving in Congress. During his long career as president pro tempore, he was third in line to the presidency and served as the high-ranking chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee. Growing up in the poverty of the West Virginia coal fields, Byrd committed his life to building a brighter future for the Mountain State. He met his wife, Irma Ora James, in high school. The couple married shortly after graduation. While supporting his new family, Byrd could not afford college. After 10 years of classes taken while also serving as a member of Congress, Byrd earned his law degree from American University in 1963. In 1985, Byrd launched the first federal merit-based scholarship. Since its inception, tens of thousands of students across the country have helped pay their tuition bills through this initiative. In the halls of Congress, Robert Byrd was best known for his fierce defense of the Constitution. The Almanac of American Politics has said that Byrd may come closer to the kind of senator the founding fathers had in mind than any other. Byrd's record is marked with controversy, though. In the 1940s, Byrd was an active member of the Ku Klux Klan. Many of his early political views strongly opposed civil rights. Byrd personally filibustered a civil rights bill for 14 hours. However, later in his life, Byrd went on record as saying he was wrong about his racist views. In his autobiography, he wrote, "I was sorely afflicted with tunnel vision," and admits having an immature outlook on life. Throughout his career, Byrd cast nearly 18,000 roll call votes. His staff remembers him as a statesman, patriot, and defender of the Constitution, and a proud son of West Virginia. Senator Byrd was married for nearly 69 years. His wife passed away in March 2006 after battling a long illness. Robert Byrd considered himself blessed to have two daughters, several grandchildren, and numerous great-grandchildren. Mike Gracia, The Associated Press.
No one served longer in Congress than Robert Byrd. He spent 6 years in the House and the last 51 in the Senate, representing the state of West Virginia. He died early this morning. He was 92 years old. Byrd was the longtime majority leader of the Senate. When he stepped aside in 1989, he took over the powerful Appropriations Committee. Within 2 years, he had already steered more than $1 billion in federal funds to West Virginia. Much of that used to build highways and buildings that were often named after him. For more detail on Byrd's contributions and what his death now means for the makeup of the Senate, we are joined by our chief Washington correspondent, Peter Cook. Peter.
Deirdre, Democrats knew this day was coming, but they didn't think it would happen this week. Senator Robert Byrd is an institution here in Washington. Republicans, Democrats have great respect for Senator Byrd, given his service to the country, his service in Congress. He knew the rules of this institution better than anybody else on Capitol Hill. And again, great respect on both sides of the aisle. This will change Washington, at least the immediate schedule, certainly the makeup of the Senate. There will be efforts in Washington to honor Senator Byrd, but there is implications immediately for the legislative landscape, specifically the issue we've been covering so closely, financial reform. It was scheduled to come to the floor of the U.S. Senate this week, and Senator Robert Byrd just last month, or actually in May, was one of the key votes that got financial reform to 60 votes in the U.S. Senate. Now that vote is gone, and there are new questions right now.
Senator Robert Byrd, the longest-serving legislator in the history of the United States, has died. Elected 9 times to the Senate, He had been in the middle of so many historic debates, also had been in a Washington area hospital since last week, suffering from dehydration.
And Senator Byrd had a storied career, George, beginning with his election to the House in 1952. He became a senator 6 years later, and last November, he broke the record for the longest-serving member of Congress.
He held every major leadership position
Incredible.
In the United States Senate. He was also the Senate's unofficial historian. He actually studied ancient Greek and Latin, so he'd write those histories as well. As we said, he has been in frail health for some time now, yet he still made it to the Senate to vote for the health care reform bill in March, and in more than 50 years, he did make his mark on history, overcame controversy, too, including that decision early in his career to join the Ku Klux Klan. John Carl covers the Senate for us, and John, that KKK membership was perhaps Senator Byrd's biggest regret.
Oh, no question about that. He was only a member briefly, but it would be a permanent stain on his record, even, George, as he became one of the true giants of the Senate.
The son of a coal miner, Robert Byrd grew up dirt poor. No electricity in his house, no running water either.
Big as the elephant, stout as the mule.
He loved fiddling, and he loved politics, and was good at both.
The country needs a leader in the White House.
His tenure spanned the terms of 12 presidents. He wasn't afraid to battle any of them.
Why is war being dealt with not as a last resort, but as a first resort?
When President Bush asked Congress for authority to use force against Iraq in 2002, most Democratic senators supported the war, not Robert Byrd.
What a shame! Fie upon the Congress. Fie upon some of the so-called leaders of the Congress.
Byrd was a Senate man through and through, rising to the top ranks, majority leader, appropriations chairman, Senate pro tem, jealously guarding the Senate's rules and its power right until the end.
I have to speak. And speak loudly. Can you hear me?
Political battles are fleeting, he once said, but the Senate must stand forever. When Byrd first ran for office in the 1940s, he briefly joined the Ku Klux Klan, a stain on his record he'd forever regret. Over the years, he became a giant of the Senate, a giant of West Virginia politics, using his clout to funnel billions of federal dollars into his poverty-ridden state. For 69 of his years, Byrd was married to his high school sweetheart, Irma, who died in 2006.
She was the guiding light for me.
He's made Senate history and he's written it. Robert Byrd once vowed to serve, quote, until I no longer have any breath in me. And that he did.
The flag over the Capitol is flying at half staff, and you can expect, Elizabeth, that this will be a day on Capitol Hill dominated by tributes to Senator Robert Byrd.
Robert Carlyle Byrd was often called the Dean of the Senate. Elected in 1958, the West Virginian was an eloquent speaker. Perhaps a better nickname for Byrd would have been the Bard of the Senate.
All freshly steeped in morning dews. So wrote the poet Robert Burns.
Colorful language aside, in the political arena, the source of Byrd's influence in the Capitol was his long tenure on the powerful Senate Appropriations Committee. His home state reaped generous benefits. He came from modest roots.
I lived in a house without electricity, no running water, no telephone, a little wooden outhouse. I started out in life without any rungs in the bottom ladder. I married a coal miner's daughter.
Byrd was born Cornelius Calvin Sale Jr. on November 20th, 1917. He was raised in West Virginia's coal mining communities by his aunt and uncle Byrd and took their name. His hardscrabble start may have been one of the reasons that Byrd made his mark as a hardline conservative on national spending issues.
We can't afford to give this administration or any other administration a blank check.
And a reformer on campaign financing.
To rise above partisanship and really do something about our present sorry system of financing federal campaigns.
A student of history, Byrd dressed as a Confederate officer in a cameo role in the film Gods and Generals. But it was a real-life role that caused him lifelong embarrassment. His membership decades ago in the Ku Klux Klan.
That was an albatross around my neck that I would always wear.
He later condemned the Klan. A two-time majority leader in the Senate, Byrd served 12 presidents. Some he liked, some he didn't.
Mission accomplished. The mission in Iraq, as laid out by President Bush and Vice President Cheney, has failed. Even more disturbing, the disdain for international law and the military bombast of this cocky, reckless administration.
You, Senator Robert Byrd, saw...
In 2001, for the third time in his life, Byrd was sworn in as President pro tem of the Senate. The honor briefly put him three heartbeats away from the presidency, behind the vice president and the Speaker of the House. While he thought about seeking the Democratic presidential nomination once, it was the Senate floor that served as his bully pulpit, referring to the hostage crisis in Iran in 1979.
I think we would be justified in waiting 444 days before we get too serious about fulfilling Iran's need for trade.
And America's modern-day dilemma in neighboring Iraq.
Instead of keeping murderous al-Qaeda terrorists on the run, the invasion of Iraq has stoked the fires of terrorism against the United States and our allies. Najaf is smoldering. Fallujah is burning, and there is no exit in sight.
He spent his life as a senatorial Don Quixote, yet he was modest about his impact. So why did he stay so long?
As Cato said, there's no greater honor than that of serving the Commonwealth.
There you have it, my friends. Compilation I put together for you of clips. You can grab all those links and get everything in its entirety all up on MediaMonarchy.com. And hopefully that kind of puts a lot of this into perspective and maybe shows you a little bit of how I know that this is kind of a big deal, to put it all very simply. But let's wrap all of this up on a lighter note, and it was briefly referenced in one of those clips, but now, and we have this by way of the Associated Press, and it's ironic, isn't it? A Virginia record label to reissue Senator Byrd's 1978 album. A Virginia record label plans to reissue a bluegrass album recorded by the late U.S. Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia. The West Virginia Democrat was the longest-serving member of Senate, and he died Monday at the age of 92. The 1978 album Mountain Fiddler features Byrd performing old-time and bluegrass songs on fiddle with vocals, along with country gentleman band members Doyle Lawson on guitar, James Bailey on banjo, and Spider Gilliam on bass. County Records owner Dave Freeman says the reissue project had been in the works for about 18 months, and they're going to have the actual CD available July 27th. So again, isn't it kind of silly that West Virginia Senator Robert Byrd's 1978 album is getting reissued on a Virginia label? But I'm sure there weren't tons clamoring to release this, and that may also just speak to the lack of media outlets in West Virginia. So, here we go. Robert Byrd, Mountain Fiddler, I Should Have Stayed in the Wagon Yard.
Last night I came to town to make this bale of cotton. I worked the whole year round. I put my team in the wagon yard and I bought me a bottle of gin. I went out to see the electric lights and to watch the cars come in. I met this dude out on the street. The clock was striking nine. He says, come on, old Hasey, come have a drink, it's fine. I must have bought him a dozen drams cause it hit my pocketbook hard. I wish I'd have bought me a half a pint and stayed in the wagon yard. Since 'cause I'm a deacon in the Hartshell Church down near Potsdam's Trot. If the sisters hear about my spree, it's bound to make them hot. I went out on the party, I lit the face that killed. When I woke up, that gang had gone and left me all their bills. I found them over on the corner in Soul Salvation Hall. That drunken bunch was out there singing, Jesus paid it all. They drug me out in a dry goods box and Lord, my pillow was hard. Wish I'd have bought me a half a pint and stayed in the wagon yard. Listen to me, farmers, I'm here to talk with sense. If you want to see them electric lights, just look right over the fence. Don't mess around with them city ducks, you'll find them slick as lard. Just go and get you a half a pint and stay in the wagon yard.
There you go. I wish I stayed in the wagon yard. That was actually the late West Virginia Senator Robert C. Byrd on his 1978 album Mountain Fiddler, which, as we noted, ironically is being re-released on a Virginia label. However, there is a playlist that I've got embedded for you. Somebody's got up the whole album as YouTube videos, and that's how I grabbed them all. So thank you for indulging my down-homedness. But now we still have so much more to go over. On MediaMonarchy.com, by way of Zero Hedge, as well as Raw Story, WAVY.com, Gulf Daily News, and more. USS Harry Truman just off Iran as Israel plots imminent Tehran raid. As first reported last week, in an article that was met with much original skepticism, the Pentagon has now confirmed that a fleet of 12 warships has passed the Suez Canal and is now likely awaiting orders to support the escalation in the Persian Gulf. The attached image, linked up from Stratfor.com, shows the latest positioning of U.S. aircraft carrier groups as of June 23rd. USS Harry Truman right now next to the USS Eisenhower, both of which are awaiting and waiting patiently just off Iran. As for the catalyst the two carriers may be anticipating, we provide the following update from Gulf Daily News, where we read that Israel may be on the verge of an attack on Iran, with an incursion originating from military bases in Azerbaijan and Georgia. Now, we being ZeroHedge.com, caution readers to take this news with a grain of salt, as the Gulf Daily News sister publication Akbar al-Khalij has a slightly less than stellar credibility rating. Then again, this is what some breaking news online most notably said about last week's carrier news, urging readers to ignore it. Yes, we have massive carrier groups amassing. And we're going to get to, throughout the show, sprinkled throughout all the stories. And again, it's all interwoven and connected. We're going to see folks saying that pretty much a green light from the G20 meetings. Big Mouth Berlusconi talking about it. And for the last several years, we've been covering the drum beating against Iran, axis of evil. But it's accelerating more and more and more and more. So we have all the related war horse updates as the international war for empire rages on. The Western Anglo establishment, the oligarchs and elites. That's how it all connects. As we were saying earlier, if you do the homework, you'll probably find the same outfits, regardless of what party, regardless of what country. They're beyond all that. They're beyond flags and nations. Remember the speech Ned Beatty gives in Network? That's getting off on a tangent. So let's briefly get further into Target Tehran.
Well, reports are circulating that the U.S. is amassing a greater military presence in the Middle East. The alleged buildup is also rumored to involve the Israeli use of Saudi Arabian airspace. It's thought by some to be in preparation for an attack on Iran. Paula Sleer can now bring us the latest live from Tel Aviv. So, Paula, tell us who and what are behind these reports.
Well, the reports are that Israeli helicopters dropped off large amounts of military equipment at a Saudi military base in northern Saudi Arabia. A follow-on from a report some 2 weeks ago that appeared in the London Times magazine. And according to that report, Riyadh had given permission for Israeli warplanes to use a narrow strip of its airspace in the northern part of the country. The report also states that Riyadh is adjusting its missile defense systems so that Israeli jets flying overhead will not be shot down. Both Jerusalem and Riyadh have denied the reports. Officially, the countries are enemy states, with Riyadh not even recognizing the state of Israel. But having said that, though, there are some who are suggesting there could be some truth in these reports because both countries fear a nuclear Iran and both countries despise the regime in Tehran. There are some also who are suggesting that the reports were leaked by Riyadh as a warning to Tehran that there were more options on the table aside from economic sanctions, while just as many people on the opposite end of the spectrum suggesting that the report could have been leaked by Iran as a warning to Saudi Arabia that it was watching it closely and was not happy with what it was seeing.
Paula, whether or not there is any intention to attack Iran, how do you think Tehran is likely to react to these reports that you're talking about?
Well, there certainly is a buzz of increased military activity around Iran. Right now, the United States has its forces in 10 countries surrounding Tehran. So if the United States did want to attack Iran, it would be in the position to do so. There are American forces in Pakistan, in Afghanistan. We're now hearing from Iranian state television that that American forces have amassed on the Azerbaijan-Iran border. Now, Azerbaijan has confirmed this, but it says that the American forces are there as a peacekeeping mission to deal with armed rebels. At the same time, Washington has also confirmed that a week ago, a fleet of 11 of its warships did sail through the Suez Canal, but it says that this is routine. Tehran, in response, has threatened that in the future it could close the waterway. What people here are worried about is a closer alliance between Turkey and Iran that could shift the balance of power in the region, particularly in light of a possible nuclear Iran, with many Arab capitals expressing concern whether or not the latest round of sanctions against Iran will in fact amount to anything. So there is a lot of concern in the region about these developments, and that is why people here are posturing and putting forward and the possibility of Israel's preparedness for some kind of strike against Iran.
Interesting developments, Paula. We'll come to you for any further information on the developing story.
And there you have it. Amassing. Azerbaijan confirms it. But it's not just there, it's everywhere. Let's get the related war whores updates where Obama calls for a Pentagon civilian component. And we can get this straight from the Associated Press. Obama says military overburdened in Afghan Iraq. Obama says U.S. troops are carrying too much of the burden in Iraq and Afghanistan and doing too many things that are more appropriate for civilians, such as building schools and setting up justice systems. Obama says the problem is that the U.S. doesn't have a civilian effort as large as the military. He wants to change that by building up a civilian expeditionary force. Is that what he's calling it now? That can go into an area once the U.S. military deems it safe to do the work of building roads, bridges, schools, and setting up civil societies. Obama said that's one reason he's increased military pay while holding the line on domestic spending. Obama made this comment at a Racine, Wisconsin town hall meeting this past Wednesday. And there we have, again, civilian national security force. A civilian component. The green shirts. And again, as we've said time and time again, as the fake economy is pulled out from under us, or rather destroyed in a controlled demolition, we're left holding the bag, and the only jobs will be working for this man. That's pretty much it. Christian Science Monitor going into Quagmire, question mark. 9 years on, Americans grow weary of war in Afghanistan. AP again notes, Afghanistan deadline, an obsession for some, says Obama. Why are you obsessing about one of the numerous campaign rhetoric promises I made and never intended to keep? I was just the blank slate that was more than happy to let you project all your hopes and changes onto me, that he was more than happy to embody as the label, the marketing label, this new face of this command and control oligarch system, again, run by and for the banksters. Through the decades, through the centuries. But everybody's finding out that we're funding our opposition, surprise, surprise, and that it's all about drugs, and we're going to get to drugs and the wars and how they fund our banks. Kissinger warns about an Afghanistan exit strategy. Coming from, again, the Financial Times, the mouthpiece to the elites. Petraeus says he'll change Afghanistan's rules of war. That's from Danger Room. And surprise, surprise, McChrystal to retire and leave the U.S. Army. We, of course, covered last week the McChrystal moment falling on his sword. Now Petraeus is in, perhaps setting up his 2012 GOP run. But speaking of Killer McChrystal and his cover-ups, new big screen documentary exposes the Pat Tillman cover-up. The Tillman cover-up is the name of it. Conservative blog Big Hollywood notes that all the reviews are uniformly glowing and trusting. But our last couple of War Horrors notes, we're going to hop over again to Danger Room, where the military mulls a new name for their psychological operations. MISO. Psychological operations sounds awesomely creepy. In actuality, the military discipline can be pretty mundane. Designing leaflets and driving sound trucks around, not plying your enemies with LSD. Now the Pentagon brass is mulling a name change that would make the cadre seem even more humdrum if the switch goes through. Psychological operations would become military information support and to operations. PSYOP would become MISO, military information support operations. Judging by the online reaction, the PSYOP community is none too pleased with the idea of a watery new acronym. Some of us joined psychological operations because it sounded awesome for its name alone. Be afraid. Be very afraid. And again, we've noted, they want to, and they are, and they will fight the net like the enemy weapon system. AllGov.com extrapolates this story. Pentagon to spend $1 billion on psychological operations. 40% of that going to private military contractors. Can't get enough of those private military contractors. They're the ones involved in running our domestic terror drills here. But we don't have time to go into all that. We will have some speculative notes about the threatagenda going on. And of course, it is Independence Day weekend. But let's wrap up our coverage, or the coverage of the recent G20 meetings, where again, the front men, the henchmen, are getting their walking and talking orders, again as it trickles down the pyramid, if you will. Toronto police rough up journalists and arrest peaceful protesters at G20. This from Raw Story, as further documentation from thestar.com. Videos on YouTube, cp24.com, as well as Twitter feeds and all of that. Reporters covering the G20 summit in Toronto say they were the target of police violence as riots blamed on anarchist groups left four police cars burning in the financial district, how appropriate, and resulted in the arrests of some 150 people. A newspaper photographer was shot with a plastic bullet in the backside while another had an officer point a gun in his face despite identifying himself as a member of the media, reported Canadian Press news agency. The agency didn't say if it was its own reporters who were targeted. In a remarkable series of tweets early this past Sunday morning, journalist Steve Paikin of public broadcaster TV Ontario said he witnessed police brutality against a reporter and the arrests of peaceful demonstrators, saying, quote, "I saw police brutality tonight. It was unnecessary. They asked me to leave the site or they would arrest me. I told them I was doing my job." All that's all on Twitter.com/SPAIKIN. Paikin, Steve Paikin. And we note, as we're sort of doing it, the coverage is always going to be about the violence. And I don't remember if we noted last week that, of course, the police cars and the things all set up all seemed like a stage-managed event. The cops left the car, and all those cars there, they fall back and let the provocateur actions take place. And we're going to get to that. A little speculative, but again, we've seen it time and time and time again. Whether it's in Canada or Genoa or Seattle or Denver, police dress up as anarchists, calls acts of violence. That gives the political capital for the state to crack down. And everybody at home, being good consumers on television, watching their television, or beyond television, they see the violence and they say, yeah, those people are bad. But as we've already referenced repeatedly today, they're going to demonize certain shady, fringe, unstable, perhaps patsy, mole, double agent provocateurs, and that justifies the crackdown all around. Because if things continue to go the way that they've been going, the average person is going to start to get pretty angry. As we track the econo crash with the latest updates and headlines on the new financial world order coming up. And again, it's the banksters, which is where we're going to go next. However, let's get a brief last bit on the G20 protest situation.
Thousands of people took to the streets in Toronto to demonstrate against the two summits. RT's Lauren Lister went to judge the mood.
It may look like a dance party behind me, but this is no party. These are all activists, and they are filling the streets, all protesting the G8 and the G20 summits happening in Canada. Now, some of these are peaceful protesters, and there is a group, and they're all dressed in black faces covered, who earlier hit our camera, did not want to be filmed. Others may describe them as anarchists. We're not sure how they would describe themselves, but part of the march, no less. When the police are not visible here, you can see them all the way around the perimeter of this march, all in riot gear, forming lines with bicycles, forming lines. They've been marching 4 hours. They have not made it to the convention center yet, where the summit is taking place, which you may recall is guarded by a 5-mile-long or kilometer-long fence that's 12 feet high to guard from any kind of protesters to get over into actually where the summit takes place. People bearing signs, yelling at the police, and we will continue to bring the latest. From Toronto, Canada, I'm Lauren Lister, RT.
So there you have it. It's all about the violence that happens. Not about what they're talking about. Not about the grievances that people have. Just like Clyde Lewis says, the pledge of a grievance. So that was all swirling around the G20 and the solstice and the Project Blackjack PSYOP and other terror drills going on, not only around the country, but around the world. as we'll see further down the road here. But if you even go back to the Bible, whether you believe it or not, we could at least say that there was probably a guy named Jesus, and if people followed his teachings like they claim that they do, they'd be a lot better off for everybody. But it seems like it's pretty much always been the banksters versus the people. And that's when Christ got pissed and threw out the money changers. That seems to pretty much be the story of civilization as we know it the last several centuries, if not much further back, like we just said. Are people finding this out fast enough? As we said, people are finding out that we're funding the Taliban in Afghanistan. People are finding out what's been going on. And again, we thank a free and open web as we have it and as we'll continue to use it. And in stories like this, and we have to wonder, this is coming from Bloomberg, of course, of Mayor Bloomberg, media mogul Mayor Michael Bloomberg of the Big Apple. But a massive story. It's coming out in full in their magazine. We have a few of their Bloomberg clips, and we go over this story on the latest episode of The New World Next Week with CorbettReport.com. Banks financing Mexico gangs admitted in Wells Fargo deal. Just before sunset on April 10th, 2006, a DC-9 jet landed at the international airport in the port city of Ciudad del Carmen, 500 miles east of Mexico City. As soldiers on the ground approached the plane, the crew tried to shoo them away, saying there was a dangerous oil leak. So the troops grew suspicious and searched the jet. They found 128 black suitcases packed with 5.7 tons of coke, valued at $100 million. The stash was supposed to have been delivered from Caracas to drug traffickers in Toluca near Mexico City, Mexican prosecutors later found. Law enforcement officials also discovered something else. The smugglers had bought the DC-9 with laundered funds they transferred through two of the biggest banks in the U.S., Wachovia, or Wachovia, and Bank of America, B of A, Be Very of A. This is all covered in the August 2010 issue of Bloomberg Markets Magazine. This was no isolated incident. Wachovia, it turns out, it made a habit of helping move money for Mexican drug smugglers. Wells Fargo and company, which bought Wachovia in 2008, has admitted in court that its unit failed to monitor and report suspected money laundering by narcotics traffickers, including the cash used to pay for four planes that shipped a total of 22 tons of coke. The admission came in an agreement that Charlotte, North Carolina-based Wachovia struck with federal prosecutors in March, and it sheds light on the largely undocumented role of U.S. banks in contributing to the violent drug trade that has convulsed Mexico for the past 4 years. Further shedding light on this, and again, it's in our context notes, and we go over it on The New World next week. Richard Grasso, head of the New York Stock Exchange, went to the FARC and said, "Hey, why don't you guys invest your drug money in Wall Street?" And on and on and on. But let's get into the two clips, again, coming from the banksters and moguls themselves. Banks financing Mexico gangs admitted.
It sounds like the sequel to the 80s drug thriller Scarface, but instead of Miami, this one is about a war raging along the U.S. border with Mexico, and it's very real. More than 23,000 dead, more than 100 tons of cocaine seized, and more than a third of $1 trillion that an American bank moved from Mexican currency exchange companies used by drug cartels. It's all in the latest issue of Bloomberg Markets Magazine. The bank is Wachovia, now a unit of Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo has admitted in court that Wachovia failed to report suspected money laundering by narcotics traffickers. That includes the cash used to buy four planes that shipped 22 tons of cocaine. According to prosecutors, here's how one deal worked. Drug smugglers in Mexico City wired $300,000 from a currency exchange to a Wachovia branch in Miami. Then they wired money from that branch to a Bank of America branch in Oklahoma City. The money was used to buy a DC-9, which then flew from St. Petersburg, Florida, to Caracas. The plane then transported 5.7 tons of cocaine cocaine valued at about $100 million to Mexico. There, the crew was arrested. Wachovia has admitted it didn't do enough to spot illicit funds while handling $378 billion from Mexican currency exchange firms over a three-year period. Wells Fargo, Wachovia's new owner, has paid $160 million in fines and penalties. If Wells Fargo keeps its pledge to improve its anti-money laundering procedures, prosecutors have promised to drop all charges by next March.
Really fascinating story, Monica. Thank you. Well, joining me now is the author of that article in Bloomberg Markets Magazine, Michael Smith. He's on the phone right now from Santiago, Chile. And Michael, thanks for joining us. And, you know, reading about Wachovia's involvement in this, why was it a target of these Mexican drug cartels?
Well, I don't know if Wachovia itself was a target. It's more the currency exchange houses, which were banked by Wachovia. And these, it's a very vulnerable industry, and it was open to corruption, and they got in there and found a bank willing to move money for them around the world, wherever they needed to move money.
And what happened at Wachovia? I mean, why did their anti-money laundering efforts fail here?
Well, if you look at the deferred prosecution agreement, you'll see that they understaffed their compliance department, which was in charge of overseeing and watching over all this money for suspicious transactions.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, there was a conflict between the people who ran the business and the people who were supposed to watch over for suspicious activity. There were several warnings by the compliance people they had on staff that these cartels were using the bank to launder money, and they were basically vetoed by the people who ran the businesses.
But why was that? What do you mean conflict?
Well, because the people that were running this business, which is called correspondent banking, in other words, handling all these transfers and charging fees, you know, they're compensated for volumes of business.
Okay.
And so when the compliance people said, hey, you should close these accounts, we were suspicious, you know, my impression was that they were thinking more about the bonuses and not really thinking hard about what was going on.
Right. They were thinking that they were going to make a lot of money, though, out of the transfer of this cash.
Exactly.
Michael, could any bank, though, in the U.S. here, I mean, couldn't any bank be susceptible to this?
Yes, all banks are susceptible, and all banks have massive, any big, you know, reputable bank has a significant compliance department, you know, sometimes hundreds of people who are paid to watch over these transactions for suspicious activity. But, you know, the drug dealers are very clever, and they keep finding ways to circumvent those systems and to play around with the vulnerabilities inside any bank.
They certainly are clever. I think those were very illuminating clips as he almost slipped a few times there. Well, I think all banks are susceptible to. That pretty much breaks it down for you. My friends, that's kind of the story of how these things work. How could the people involved in protecting this ever let this happen? Again, the stories all seem kind of different, but we see the same MOs just as we see a lot of the same maneuvers and organizations and more. What we're going to do right now is remind you that we're now into hour number two of the 176th episode of Media Monarchy. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Broadcasting live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, and revereradio.net. And again, a huge thanks to all our list of affiliates who replay the show. What I forgot to tell you at the top of the show is just some of the number of ways you can get in touch. Facebook.com/Media Monarchy, MySpace.com/Media Monarchy, Twitter, YouTube, Ustream.tv/Media Monarchy. CafePress.com/Media Monarchy, where we have a t-shirt with the logo on it. Send me an email, MediaMonarchy@gmail.com, or on Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, Archive.org, NewWorldNextWeek.blip.tv, growing all the time. And again, only thanks to your help. So speaking of, a big thanks to Martha in Alabama for her donation, and the continued support from my man Alan in Omaha. Your donation helps keep the monarchy growing, able to do and grow and build and keep doing more things to spread this open source information. The donate button is there on the top right of the page. And I just sent out to Martha in Alabama, as thanks for her donation, the exclusive DVD from Richard Grove of Tragedy and Hope, of the late, great 9/11 Synchronicity podcast, and so much more. PeaceRevolution.org. His DVD, 2020 Hindsight, just shipped out yesterday. $10 donated to Media Monarchy gets you that DVD-ROM packed with info. Usable, actionable, real info. And it relates and touches on a lot of what we just went over with banks, financing, drug running. But we're now going to get to the police state updates. Questioning Awakenings, where we first note, by way of Washington's blog, and as well on Global Research, they assert it as a statement. I put the question mark, because I don't know. Are people wake and awakening to this fast enough as the window kind of slams shut? And again, I'm not one of these guys who's going to get up and yell, but, oh, you're sheeple, you're stupid. I want to think that people can be the change they want to see in the world. And that's what we're trying to do here. But are the powers that be terrified of a mass worldwide awakening? The new massive article from Andrew Gavin Mitchell, The Global Political Awakening and the New World Order, The Technological Revolution and the Future of Freedom, Part 1. This first part basically goes into a lot of the recent quotes, some of which we've played for you, from the string puller of puppet Obama, Zbigniew Brzezinski. And it starts with a quote that we just hit a few weeks ago from a recent Brzezinski speech. For the first time in history, almost all of humanity is politically activated, politically conscious, and politically interactive. Global activism is generating a surge in the quest for cultural respect and economic opportunity in a world scarred by memories of colonial or imperial domination. The resulting global political activism is generating a surge in the quest for personal dignity, cultural respect, and economic opportunity in a world painfully scarred by memories of centuries-long alien colonial or imperial domination. The politics of populism are transforming the politics of power. That awakening is socially massive and politically radicalizing. These energies transcend sovereign borders and pose a challenge both to existing states as well as to the existing global hierarchy, on top of which America still perches. Those are all quotes from Brzezinski, and again in this massive article from Andrew Marshall. We ask, are the elite panicking? We know they wanted to pull the rug out. We know they want to burn the joint down and collect the insurance. But is the fire now raging out of control and they're now elbowing each other out of the way, trying to get to the exit? There's a lot of signs pointing to both ways. And again, I don't really subscribe to the single unified field conspiracy theory. There's one group behind everything. Again, Richard Grove says, more like multi-generational serial killers. And they're gangsters. And they battle each other sometimes. They gotta bump each other off. And a lot of people get burned. But again, through this fake political paradigm, the same agendas keep going forward. They put up the puppets, they put up the shadows up on the wall, and we think that's all real. I can be guilty of it myself. And again, I just, like I say, I want to be humble in this. Not be all high and mighty, like I've got everything figured out. I like to think we're trying to go through all this together. Supreme Court says states must honor gun rights. My friends, Supreme Court been quite on the tear. Some good, some bad. HLSWatch.com, that's Homeland Security Watch, asks the question, does the U.S. have any domestic terror groups? And on the speculative note, and again, we like to cover and touch on these things that are in the predictive programming, Mockingbird media, echo chamber. There's a piece up on beforeitsnews.com asking, will Washington, D.C. be nuked on July 4th? And they go through laying out all the predictive programming before 9/11, in the media, in the zeitgeist, and go on to talk about all the instances, both years old and very recent, all containing plots about a nuke attack, July 4th, Washington, D.C. Movies like Independence Day, X-Files Fight the Future movie, War of the Worlds, Southland Tales, Live Free or Die Hard, which I think is the fourth one, Shutter Island, MacGruber, Jonah Hex, which just opened, and more in X-Files on TV and The Simpsons and Lie to Me. History Channel ran a documentary called Day After Disaster, which goes into detail about what kind of effect a nuclear bomb detonation would have on Washington, D.C. And I always, when we start to get into this kind of realm, I always mention that video game trailer for Shattered Union that lays out a possibly eerily precise version of possible future histories. And again, the drills are always going on. They can be bootlegged. They can flip live with patsies and moles and rogue networks inside the intelligence agencies and private military contractors. We're putting these things on the record. We don't want to be always screaming that martial law is coming tomorrow. Which again, I think I've referenced recently in my interview with Michael Tesserian, or at least in his talk at the recent conspiracy conference. Then as you're starting to get into this information and it starts to pile up and wash over you, your inclination is that, oh shit, it's all going down tomorrow. But what it seems to be is the slow, incremental frog boil. They slowly turn up the heat, and before we know it, they came for you and there wasn't anyone left to defend you. Mark Dice, love him or hate him, he knows how to do what he does in the media monkey wrenching. A recent video running around, I believe he's in Southern California, knowing that Americans don't know why we celebrate 4th of July, basically asking folks on the street and giving them misleading information that they nod their heads along to. Not unlike a Jay Leno talking to foolish people on the street, that is really embarrassing. Dozens of U.S. citizens, oh wait, before that, as we're talking about all of this speculative nuke attacks, predictive programming, martial law, neithercore.us asks what would life be like under martial law. This all ties in with the threatiganda. But what I was going to say, by way of raw story, dozens of U.S. citizens on assassination list, White House advisor hints. When it was confirmed last winter by then-Director of National Intelligence Dennis Blair, which we went over on KUFO with Clyde Lewis and Alex Ansari, that the Obama administration had authorized the assassination of American citizens working with terrorist groups overseas. It appeared that no more than three Americans were being targeted in this manner. But in an interview last week with the Washington Times, however, Deputy White House National Security Advisor for Homeland Security and Counterterrorism, John O. Brennan, suggested that the number might actually amount to dozens. There are, in my mind, dozens of U.S. persons who are in different parts of the world, and they are very concerning to us. Not just because of the passport they hold, but because they understand our operational environment here. They bring with them certain skills, whether it be language skills or familiarity with potential targets, and they're very worrisome, and we are determined to take away their ability to assist with terror attacks. And we always seem to find the intelligence fingerprints all over these guys whenever we have a underpants bomber or Times Square time bomb or Fort Hood shooting or any of the wave of suspicious homegrown errorism that we've seen going on. Oklahoma police taser bedridden 86-year-old woman. How you like that? And then it's down to Atlanta. Parking lot attendants trained to fight terror. That's from CNN. Spy cams proposed for South Miami Beach. FBI, DHS attempt to seize Colorado Indie Media server. And, of course, silence the users. Colorado.indymedia.org. Hopping up to Chicago. Home of Chicago Cop Watch and my man Spencer Thayer. John Burge guilty. A jury convicts Chicago police torturer of lying under oath. Not convicted for, of course, torturing people and beating confessions out of innocent people, but for lying under oath. Gotta get Al Capone for tax evasion. Sometimes it's tough in the corrupt Chicago machine. 6-year-old Ohio girl put on the no-fly list. As we'll, of course, take the side detour by way of allgov.com to ask, who is John Pistole, the new head of the Transportation Security Administration? They have a great ongoing series of finding out who the names are behind these positions, whether they're selected or elected, usually selected. More on that in just a little bit. But we're going down the police state headlines. 524 National Guard soldiers headed to Arizona-Mexico border. That's from WTOP.com. And Dana Gabriel on Be Your Own Leader gets into the further future U.S.-Canada joint Arctic security and control. Of course, to all tie in with the SPP and a possible North American community, as the CFR likes to call it. White House preparing biometric national online ID card for all Americans. We've gone over that, but it's been on cyberspacewar.com. But we like to cross-post and cross-reference to get the information out anywhere it's applicable. That's coming from informationliberation.com. ACLU study highlights U.S. Surveillance Society. Now, we know in the past the ACLU has basically gone over that, what is it, 500-mile border pretty much around the United States, including where I sit in Portland, Oregon, of a basically constitution-free zone. Here we are welcome to the Surveillance Society. That's what the ACLU concluded Tuesday with a report chronicling government spying and the detention of groups and individuals, quote, for doing little more than peacefully exercising their First Amendment rights. The report, which you can download as a PDF, the spy files, policing free speech, police surveillance, and obstruction of First Amendment protected activity. There is the color-coded map that, of course, does include Oregon, but very conspicuously does not include West Virginia. It's a nice little bright white spot surrounded by red surveillance corruption. From the Huffington Post, we'll note that once America started waterboarding, most newspapers and major media outlets stopped calling it torture. This coming from a new study. And the economicscollapseblog.com, as they are good at putting together ugly lists. This time it's 50 random facts that make you wonder what in the world has happened to the U.S. And we'll close out these police state updates with a clip that you have to see. And again, I add the question mark. And we'll also take a moment here to note that just because it's on the site and just because I mention it or reference a website doesn't mean I endorse it. Just because I say it doesn't mean you should endorse it. Cops dressed as anarchists at the G20 in Toronto? Question mark. There's a little quick minute-long video. Undercover brothers. And they do look suspiciously fit and well-kempt. And they have just the perfect assortment of accoutrements. The bandana with the marijuana leaf. The shea patch. Basically, out of central casting. Basically, provocateurs. Police provocateurs. We now want to move to the news purge. It's massive, as always. And again, as we noted on the previous B-side episode on Food World Order, we call the list of ugly headlines the Binge and Purge. On cyberspacewar.com, we call it DEFCON. And here on MediaMonarchy.com, it's the 7-1 news purge for July 1st, Independence Day. As we noted, T apostrophe S. But that was also the name of our opening track from the previous B-side episode from Elliot Smith. Again, as we are coming up on the nation's holiday that, as we just referenced, a bunch of Americans have no idea what it's all about. So we first hit 9/11 updates, where coming out of New Zealand, tvnz.co.nz, destruction of the Twin Towers voted most memorable news event. And from Cincinnati.com, we note that a Cincinnati firm is now heading up 9/11 compensations. Leon Panetta of the Clinton era, of course, returns and is now the head of the Criminals in Action, the Cocaine Importation Agency, the Central Intelligence Agency, where he notes in the Telegraph that the U.S. hasn't had any good intel on Osama in years. WTC Steel salvaged after 9/11 to be part of Ludlow Memorial in Massachusetts. More on that from MassLive.com. And a massive report with lots of documentation and videos. It's on thepeoplesvoice.org. Independent investigation into Pentagon attack yields alarming information. This is coming from the folks who have pretty much just been focusing on this, the Citizens Investigation Team. I forget their exact name, that's just off the top of my head. But we'll always note here that we don't worship at the Church of Controlled Demolition. There are a lot of other things surrounding the official conspiracy theory of 9/11. As we've gone over recent updates concerning Building 7 and Silverstein, as well as the insider trading, and Buzzy Krongard, and the CIA, and Deutsche Bank, and Alex Brown, and again, the banksters, the drugs, the resource wars, we find the same red thread. So it's on to EconoCrash. And we're going to have our first of, I believe, two clips from Webster Tarpley, tarpley.net, a frequent contributor on Russia Today, again, which is pretty much the go-to news source on YouTube. Basically, they have a quick or long video up on pretty much every news story, and as I like to add in lots of multimedia information for you here, I find it always comes back to them covering pretty much every story going on. Such as the financial reform bill is, of course, a triumph of the Wall Street derivatives lobby.
So what is so special about this, you know, reform bill that you have lawmakers and President Obama saying that we need this in order to prevent a future crisis, that this is going to prevent any other economic crisis from happening?
Unfortunately, it won't. I would say this is a complete triumph of the Wall Street derivatives lobby. It's a sellout so bad it's grotesque. Even cynics are astounded by the impudence of the U.S. Congress. Just a couple of things. They wouldn't say that a stockbroker has to pursue the best interests of their own client. They wouldn't do anything. anything to stop rip-offs on the financing of used cars. There's nothing to limit interest rates on credit cards or payday loans. And there's nothing on foreclosures. There's no cap on leverage. You can speculate all you want. There's nothing to diminish the power of the Federal Reserve. They've even gained in power.
Well, it's very interesting because experts have said that, you know, Barack Obama wanted this thing in the bag. So when he gets to the G8 and the G20 summits in Canada, he could sort of wave this in their face and say, hey, look what my country did. It's time you guys reform your institutions.
Look, it may not pass. That's always the hope, that there'll be a rebellion of the rank and file in the backbenchers. Look, we're in a depression.
Most people are thinking it will.
Well, who knows? Bush had some surprises. Bush the Elder. It's a depression caused by banks and hedge funds speculating with derivatives. That was the banking panic of September 08. This does nothing. There are no bright line prohibitions. There are no penalties. Now, there was one attempt. Senator Blanche Lincoln, paragraph 716, she said, we want to prevent banks from dealing credit default swaps, at least. There's nothing about collateralized debt obligations, what brought down Lehman, Citibank, and Merrill, but at least credit default swaps, what brought down AIG. In the night, last night, the crime was done. Congressman Peterson of Minnesota came forward and said, look, we've got a compromise in a back room, not on TV, who said, look, we're going to have foreign exchange swaps and credit derivatives and interest rate swaps all allowed for banks. So it means that Blanche Lincoln's measure is gutted. There was one other serious thing, the Volcker Rule. And that said, commercial banks can't do speculation, proprietary trading for their own account. You remember Scott Brown, the candidate from Massachusetts who drove a pickup truck to dupe the voters? He just took his pickup truck and drove it right through the federal, the Volcker Rule on this bill. So now they can do 3% of their capital in a hedge fund and speculate with that, which means they can lose 200 or 300% of their own capital and be completely bankrupt. And if that's not enough, there's also this quibble about proprietary trading and market making. Where's the line? There's going to be a study group to decide that. So that will take several years. And in the meantime, I think a lot of these banks will go bankrupt.
So you're saying Wall Street emerged as a winner here, which it wasn't supposed to. But what about the Federal Reserve? I understand that the Federal Reserve under this bill is actually going to get more power, so we can consider them a winner too.
At the beginning, there was a tremendous resentment for the failure of Bernanke. At Helicopter Ben struck out completely. Now he has more power. But in terms of this, what do you think Goldman Sachs is paying Obama for? How come Wall Street gave more money to Obama? He is in the pocket of Wall Street. And of course, Senator Dodd is headed for Wall Street. Barney Frank, bailout Barney, they're all in the same boat. And the Republicans. The Republicans act as if a hedge fund is just a mom and pop Main Street business that deserves to be able to hedge. I mean, it's a complete mythology going on.
And as if all that wasn't enough, the econo crash continues. Dollar should be replaced as international standard, UN report says. This from CNN. The dollar is an unreliable international currency and should be replaced by a more stable system. The United Nations Department of Economic and Social Affairs said in a report released Tuesday. One world currency. Krugman gets into why we could be entering a third depression. And again, we noted those ugly lists from the economiccollapseblog.com. Here's seven potential economic effects of a war with Iran, like the price of oil would skyrocket, fear would explode in world financial markets, world trade would instantly seize up, military spending would escalate, Russia would greatly benefit, massive inflation would happen, and the price of gold would go through the roof. Just like that traitor noted in the documentary, the corporation that, as the World Trade Center buildings were exploding into aerosolized dust, he thought, wow, gold must be exploding. And our last econo crash note, Obamaville shanty towns spread across America. Call them Hoovervilles, Bushvilles, Obamavilles. The growing, rising masses of folks unemployed, homeless, foreclosed on, starting to set up tent cities. And again, it's all playing out as if it had all been put down in some bad sci-fi movie in the 70s. And it all keeps playing out. We're going to keep going further down the ugly news purge as I spin many plates here, keeping everything up in the air as we cover this mass amount of information. On the geopolitics tip, FBI indicts 10 as alleged Russian spies, and the timing of the case and the nature of the charges are highly suspect.
The U.S. Justice Department is reporting the arrest of 10 individuals accused of being Russian agents in the United States. So what could this mean for the relationship between the two world powers? Well, I'm joined now by author and investigative journalist Webster Tarpley. So Webster, according to the FBI complaint, this investigation has been going on for decades, really picked up in the last year and a half or so. What do you make of all of this?
I think it's very strange and it's disturbing. Let's try to do first the internal critique. I mean, over the years, I've tried to become a little bit of a connoisseur of the literary output of the FBI. It's a little bit like literary criticism. So we have 10 people charged for spying, and they're supposedly long-term deep cover agents, a sleeper cell, if you like. They're not charged with espionage. They're charged with conspiracy to be agents of a foreign power and money laundering. These are weak charges. How can it fall short of espionage?
Right. Now, differentiate between someone being charged for espionage and someone being charged for being an unlawful agent on behalf of a foreign government. What does that mean?
Espionage would be you approach a government official, or you are a government official and you get recruited. So as a government official, you have access to secrets, and that's the payoff. Or you could imagine an agent of influence, somebody who has a career and they want him to become some top official in the government, but all the while remaining a foreign agent. Normally, when there's a sleeper cell, they're either going to engage in sabotage at some critical point, or they'll try to recruit other agents. But in this case, none of that. They're accused of trying to seek out and develop ties, friendships, in policy circles in the United States and send back reports. Now, normal definition of that is journalism or scholarship, to make friends with policymakers.
Well, they said they Americanized themselves and then were reporting back, apparently, to the Russian government. The FBI complaint said that they wanted to sort of infiltrate themselves in think tanks. But Webster, I want to talk about the timing here,
sure.
Though. You know, this comes just days after President Medvedev's visit to the United States. They said they had a good meeting, try to reset U.S.-Russia relations, and then this comes out. Is this a bombshell? Is this an embarrassment, essentially, to both governments? What do you think?
Well, we've just had the most normal U.S.-Russian summit in all of history. This was the hamburger diplomacy. I suppose if we'd had a meeting of Lincoln with Tsar Alexander II, that would have been more cordial, but this was already very cordial. Now, the obvious question, is there an intelligence faction in the U.S. intelligence community that doesn't like this? Well, there are precedents for these things, right? In May of 1960, President Eisenhower was going to go to the summit in Paris and meet Khrushchev, and they were going to make a deal over Berlin and a whole series of other issues left over from World War II. There was a group in the U.S. intelligence community with Alan Dulles. They didn't want it to happen. They sabotaged the U-2, a huge incident, and Khrushchev, even if they'd wanted to make a deal, was not able to do it. So, is there an anti-Russian faction in the U.S. intelligence community? Well, sure there is. You can pick up the Washington Post. It's very strong there, more in the Washington Post than the New York Times. You can read the columns by Misha Lippman once a month, or Ann Applebaum, whose husband is the Polish foreign minister. You can read Anders Aslund, who did so much to wreck the Soviet economy at the end of the Gorbachev era. And I would generally say this is the Zbigniew Brzezinski faction. Just if we can go back to the indictment for one second, there's something sort of Cold War-ish, neo-McCarthyite, old-fashioned about it. They're talking about assuming the identities of dead people, writing in invisible ink, shortwave radio, a drop box in a bookstore in Greenwich Village. This sounds like something out of World War II espionage novels, that old movie, The House on 92nd Street.
And that's why I like getting clips and getting updates from Webster Tarpley. I think he gives the great historical perspective. And again, I don't fall behind any one leader, and I like this guy, and I like this show. We get information anywhere and everywhere it's available from. So, further on this story from the Washington Post and Danger Room, FBI arrests 10 accused of working as Russian spies. Danger Room has the who's who in the Russian spy ring. And we'll also make a note, and we have a couple links, of the sexy Russian spy, Anna Chapman. We've got her Facebook page as well as a clip before all of this came down in the last week talking to Russia Today, who we just heard from. And basically she's become quite the internet sensation because, well, quite simply, she's pretty hot. One spy suspect released on bail, two held, and again, these are the crazy kind of things again, just like Tarpley said. Hey, it's like a movie. Speaking of the New York Times reporter calls Zionist terrorism romantic. Back when the Irgun was doing it, I-R-G-U-N, Israeli terror force from the 70s, I believe. Speaking of the third rail of the geopolitical scene, the I-word, rights group probes U.S. agencies on foreknowledge of Israeli flotilla raid. Surprise, surprise, foreknowledge. Italian Prime Minister Big Mouth Berlusconi says Israel will probably react preemptively on Iran. ActivistPost.com notes that Congress pretty much declared preemptive war on Iran with this latest round of sanctions. Furthermore, clips. Furthermore, from ConsortiumNews.com, a huge, great piece from Robert Perry that gives you a lot of background. The CIA Likud sinking of Jimmy Carter. G8 chiefs slam Iran and North Korea. North Korea warns of an accident during their military drills. Could start war. And usually that's how it happens. Some false flag catalyzing catastrophic event meant to expand a war that had already been planned on. Billions in cash shipped out of Afghanistan. That's from allgov.com. Kyrgyzstan votes on referendum for new constitution. That's from Wikinews. Supreme Court rejects Vatican immunity in pedophile cases. So the trial right here in Oregon is going to move forward. Again, more on that from allgov.com. Amazingly enough, from the Telegraph, a lizard beast herself, the Queen, to make historic UN address and appeal for world peace. We have that to look forward to. A British friend noted, she's just trying to prep for the London 2012 Olympics. And speaking of the British arm of the Western finance central bank oligarch elites, Tony Blair to receive U.S. Peace Medal. That's from the BBC. Maybe that can go right along with Obama's Nobel Peace Prize. On to the media memes. Lady Gaga's upcoming tour to include human corpses. That's from MTV.com. It's going to be the corpses from the Body Worlds shows that have hit museums. I think they were in Portland not too long ago. But of course, when these things come up, we always reference VigilantCitizen.com doing amazing work breaking down the pop culture, if you will, the occult symbolism in mass media and entertainment. More on Lady Gaga from VigilantCitizen.com. He also has a new article that we'll put right in here with it, Dumbing Down Society Part 1, Foods, Beverages, and Meds. We should probably cross-post that on Food World Order as well. Blue Helmets turn to music as a Darfur peace tool. That's from Scoop out of New Zealand. And from Glenn Greenwald, new study documents media's servitude to government. And I believe that ties into some of the other stories that we have spread around the monarchy. There's also a quick video where some folks go into a Best Buy and load up all the players with the latest documentaries from Jason Burmes and Alex Jones, Invisible Empire and Rise of FEMA, both of which are available actually on Netflix. The murder and the mayhem. The mass murder contagion. Widow claims David Carradine died because of insufficient coddling by film crew. You recall the story several months ago. David Carradine died apparently by autoerotic asphyxiation. And those cases always look somewhat suspicious, as it did in the case of Michael Hutchence of NXS. But here his widow is saying, "We knew he was a bad guy. You guys should have watched him more closely." an update on a story that we haven't gone into enough. Perhaps we will. Los Angeles money launderer with CIA seal on his hideout in a mosaic that was right across the street from the Federal Reserve. There's an update from clicktohouston.com. Mysterious ex-con draws comparison to Jason Bourne. Cops say siblings brawled over butter in mac and cheese. We cover all the ridiculous attacks as we all fight amongst ourselves. So it seems silly to go from something like that to 21 dead in Mexican gang battle near U.S. border. That from early this morning on July 2nd, 2010. And to our good friend Barry Satoro, the Obamasiah, and all his apostles of war, Obama appoints more friends and donors to ambassadorships than Bush, or Clinton, or Reagan. Pulitzer Prize-winning columnists call Obama a female with a humanoid problem, noting that if Bill Clinton was the first black president, Tex Mars says, as others in the Jewish community have noted, that Obama's the first Jewish president. Here it ties in with a president being called a wimp in the controlled corporate media, that he then, just like Poppy Bush, gives them the political capital and will to want to strike out and do ridiculous, murderous things. Obama Twitter hacker avoids jail. We've noted this hacked presidency. And we also note the birther meme. Here's Representative Steve King slipping it in on the floor of Congress.
I'd be happy to take that $40,000 loan and a guarantee of a college degree and think that child could pay that off. But for nothing, they don't get a college degree, or they don't get an education. They just get access to citizenship of the United States of America for their $44,000. That's their share of the national debt. Little baby with ink on their foot, stamped right there on the birth certificate. There's one in this country we haven't seen, but the footprint on those we have seen, those little babies. Oh, Uncle Sam, $44,000.
As we've said time and time again, even if the birther question is answered and it's all faked, they'll just use that to change the Constitution, and then we'll get people like Arnold Schwarzenegger or worse. CFR shills say frustration with Obama goes beyond left and right. This is coming from Huffington Post, where they noted as Arianna Huffington, appearing on Fareed Zakaria's CNN show, said that frustration with Obama goes beyond left and right. And on that note, they are right. However, they don't point out all the times that all these folks are affiliated with the Council on Foreign Relations and a lot of the same think tank media mighty Wurlitzer organizations. Fareed Zakaria, CFR. Sanjay Gupta, CFR. As we mentioned last week, George Clooney, CFR. Katie Couric, CFR. Biden's latest quip. Vice President jokes with Wisconsin ice cream store manager, calls him a smartass. Barely half of U.S. governors born in the state they represented. That kind of ties in with Robert Byrd. Long time, born and raised West Virginian, versus someone like Schwarzenegger, which would be on the opposite end of that gruesome spectrum. Kagan faces quote-unquote tough questioning on her coronation that's going on. And amazingly enough, and this is how it works when you're kind of data mining and kind of tapped in to the zeitgeist and can see the memes and the semiotics, we made a quick run through the grocery store, waiting in line, saw the USA Today, and on the corner, they had just a little quick blurb about the new Twilight movie, where it said, vampires versus werewolves, and right below it was the picture of Congress questions Kagan. I was like, wow, vampires versus werewolves, that's quite fitting. And then I got home and saw the update that someone on the second day of softball questioning actually did ask Kagan about her opinion on the Twilight saga. And I guess to her benefit, she being Kagan, seems pretty mortified and embarrassed about the whole thing. But again, those are the strange memes. And it's all swirling around in the predictive programming media stew that, again, here we're trying to somehow make semblance out of it. Our last topic on this July 1st, News Purge Independence Day, are the Oregon oddities, of which we've become quite the home to, as we are apt to do from time to time. Portland police reopening the Gore investigation. We've noted this just briefly in the past couple of weeks. Police released tape from Gore accuser's interview. Apparently her name's leaked out now, or she's come out and said her name is Molly Haggerty, and she called Al Gore a pervert and sexual predator. And I think someone noted, I don't know that I've noted it here, but that something about the bill being $500, and that doesn't really sound like a regular massage bill. But be that as it may, as we've noted, Oregon, home of salacious sex crimes and otherwise, whether that's Bob Packwood or our own mayor or God knows what else. So all that's still swirling around. Troutdale man got the Constitution Party nod for governor. And in the ongoing story of the missing kid here in Portland, Kyron Horman, been missing for several weeks. The story became huge, national story, billboards all over the place. Then we saw that the dad was going to divorce the mom, and then that was a red flag. And then we saw that some restraining order was put on the stepmom of missing Oregon boy. She's now barred from children. And it kind of reminds us that, unfortunately, seems like whenever we see these stories, it turns out to be the mom, and it almost always turns out to be psychotropic medication. But all that remains to be seen. We also had an armed woman surrendering after a 6-hour standoff on an Oregon highway. And our last Oregon oddity, we note, citizen writes cop a ticket in Oregon, and it works.
A role reversal of sorts in Oregon. A civilian gave a police officer a parking ticket.
You see police park right there a lot.
Oh, yeah, I'm fairly often, yeah.
The officer allegedly parked in a no parking zone while he went inside a restaurant to pick up his dinner. A local patron didn't like what he saw, so he wrote him up with a citizen's citation. It worked. Now the officer has to go to court.
Now, did you notice in that clip that they referred to him as a civilian? We've noted that from time to time on the show as, again, the words and the language, the spelling, casting the spell with the words. You're now a civilian, which is military speak. You're either in the military or you're a civilian. Quickly now, as we close out this episode 176, we do still have a massive amount of BioWars and EnviroHealth updates, evacuation, geoengineering, and infections, and I've pretty much lost track, what is this, week 7 of covering the Gulf oil spill, and just it gets uglier and more disgusting and worse and worse and worse, and we do have the flashbacks for you to trace back through the weeks. So, here we have for this week. Toxic beaches, mouth blisters, sore throats, lung problems, danger to city water, government approves decontamination centers. That's from shtfplan.com. Shit hitting the fan plan, indeed. BP worker found dead of natural causes. That's from nwfdailynews.com. Bobby Jindal votes, or rather vetoes, sorry, a little dyslexia there, Jindal vetoes bill to open spill records. That's from the Miami Herald. Hurricane season triggers planning to evacuate oil spill site. That's from the Washington Post. We also have activistpost.com, Veterans Today, myfoxchicago.com, as Katrina trained FEMA planned force evacuations. FEMA evacuation plans for Tampa Bay area in place? Question mark. We do have Obama declaring a state of emergency in Texas. In the last couple of notes, U.S. House passes first legislation related to the Gulf oil spill. That's coming from Raw Story. And we'll close out the Gulf oil spill updates with another one from AllGov.com. Toxic Katrina trailers now used for Gulf oil spill workers. They're back, and they're smelly as ever. The portable trailers used in the wake of Hurricane Katrina to house thousands of people who lost their homes and that were discovered to contain unhealthy levels of formaldehyde have returned to the Gulf Coast. But instead of the Federal Emergency Management Agency being responsible for the trailer's return, local agencies and private companies have been buying the units to house workers involved in the oil spill cleanup effort. So, just to again briefly run down all the red flags and sinister forces and connections that we've noticed and noted here over the past 6 or 7 weeks. There was a massive amount of stock being sold in the weeks leading up to the Gulf oil spill. There were drills and exercises going on in the days and weeks leading up to it. There was foreknowledge about the problems and the deficiencies from British Petroleum. Longtime law flaunter, polluter. You see the first responders being told not to wear safety gear. And now we're tying in the Katrina angle. Again, Katrina, 9/11 being the two massive terror events of the last 10 years in the States. Two massive sort of test runs of what things would be like when the doo-doo hit the oscillator, if and when it does. Again, we've kind of noted the incremental march. Probably won't happen overnight, but then we do have massive events and even smaller terror events that move the agenda along and kind of fast forward it a little bit, especially things like 9/11 or Katrina. But on a smaller level, things like the Underpants Bomber and the other sort of patsy intelligence-connected false flag events and his handler and all that. We don't have time to go into the Underpants Bomber. But we tie in the Katrina connections on how things would go. In that ultimately, as we've said again, if things get sort of Mad Max-ish bad, you're going to see most of the first responders and cops and authority figures abandon their post anyway so they can go take care of their families. And it's going to be what Katrina looked like. And of course, they always hold off any kind of aid and assistance to the last possible moment, till it's blown so far out of control, again, whether that's 9/11 or Katrina or the Gulf oil spill. Even if you believe the official stories of all these things, you have to know that there's at least some kind of prior knowledge, and that they, as former IDF soldier Rahm Emanuel notes, that they never want to let a catastrophe go wasted or unexploited. Order out of chaos. We'll shift gears into the rest of the EnviroHealth headlines. From the Daily Mail, again, as this story gets wider and wider and wider, and this is their headline, Attack of the Vapors, How Jet Trails Block Out the Sunshine. Again, when you say words like chemtrails, people think you're a kook. But if you use the nomenclature that they use, that they openly talk about it in the CFR think tanks and in the foundation-funded pharma military outfits, they call it geoengineering the atmosphere. They're absolutely doing it. Pacific Northwest seems rife with it. I saw massive, odd jet trails the other day and an inverted rainbow for no apparent reason. But again, this is just speculation and telling you what I see and what I saw. Extensive cleanup work done on Plum Island. That is, of course, from BioPrepWatch.com. And I'll note, I got a bootleg of the new George Romero film, Survival of the Dead. And it takes place on Plum Island, wouldn't you know it? That would be the biolab where some authors have noted and documented their connection to the creation of Lyme disease. Czech military to help National Guard establish chemical warfare unit in Texas. Timothy C. Haney, potential new postal service boss, tied to the anthrax scare, worries workers. Basically, he was one of the guys running one of the post offices that got sent the false flag anthrax attack pinned on the dead Patsy Bruce Ivins. Again, all these stories far too massive to get into here. Hopefully you can whet your appetite on any number of these levels and you can go down and do the research for that. But quickly now, Democrats step back on carbon cap. Scientific expertise lacking among doubters of climate change. That's from TerraDaily.com. UK lives destroyed by happy pills. Experts say thousands given dangerous drugs they don't need. Airport body scanners deliver radiation dose 20 times higher than first thought. And this note, our last clip, by way of CNN, Missouri Veterans Administration Hospital may have infected 1,800 veterans with HIV.
A VA hospital may have exposed more than 1,800 vets to hepatitis and HIV. St. Louis Hospital has sent letters to those vets. The patients may have been exposed to the viruses through contaminated dental instruments.
They were actually doing additional work in order to protect their kind of delicate instruments. Sometimes policies don't always get followed because people have very good intentions, but the end result is the policy that was supposed to be followed wasn't followed.
The hospital has sent certified notification letters to the affected patients, and Missouri Congressman Russ Carnahan is calling for a full investigation into what went wrong. But we just received a statement from the VA saying that the VA's primary focus, as always, is, quote, has been on the safety and care of our veterans. VA leadership recognized the seriousness of this situation and is taking steps to prevent this from happening again.
Oh, I'm sure it was all just an amazing accident. There's no overarching eugenics agenda connected to all of that, is there? Our last few EnviroHealth headlines. Inside the psychopath's brain, a neuroscientist uncovers a dark secret. That's from the foundation-funded National Petroleum Radio. And, of course, gearing us into the Brave New World Order, where we'll be genetically engineered to be alphas and betas. Hermiston, Oregon, testing new home energy use monitors. That's right, tying you into the smart grid from International Business Machines, the final solutions company. And our last note from right here in Oregon, from Examiner.com, Oregon Paint Recycling Program, a national first. And that's a rather innocuous way to end this episode 176 of Media Monarchy, July 2nd, 2010. I've got two quick creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. Oklahoma Office of State Finance out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the Naval Ocean System Center out of Miami, Florida. They hit me up via an article on opednews.com where someone thankfully posted up the latest episode of The New World Next Week. So that's going to do it, my friends. I think that's everything. I think I've mentioned everything. There's always so much and too much to go over. Again, you can send me an email, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. Try and get involved as we're trying to grow the monarchy. I thank you guys for listening. Again, this is how it all goes. We share the information while we have all these avenues available. And that's how we'll make more informed and better decisions. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, as always, to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups.
featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, the New World Network video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news clips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Them that got shall get. Them that's not shall lose. That's not.